Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 377. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about kangaroos and wine and great white sharks as we go to southern Australia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. This episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by Viator. We're going to talk in this episode about South Australia, and there are in fact 31 different activities in South Australia you can book through Viator, including a two-day tour of Kangaroo Island, and you'll hear why soon you might want to think about doing that. To book and make sure that Amateur Traveler gets credit, go to amateurtraveler.com/tours. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have three news stories for you. The first one is good news for Egypt tourism, and that was that the new governor of Egypt's Luxor province quit. He had connections to a hardline Islamist group that killed 58 tourists there in 1997, and because he was elected the head of tourism for Egypt, resigned. And so this is good news for Egypt tourism. Unfortunately, the bad news for Egypt tourism that I think is really going to set them back quite a lot is that a U.S. citizen did die this week in violence in Egypt. And the one thing I wanted to point out about this story is that he died because he was at a protest in Alexandria. He chose to go to that protest and try and film it. And if you were in a country and there are protests and there is unrest, you don't have to go. And that, in this case, proved to be a very unwise decision. And I hope you make better ones. Speaking of odd and possibly questionable decisions, there is an unusual amusement park now in the central Mexican state of Hidalgo that for $20 a pop with a 3 to 4 hour night walk simulates an illegal border crossing from Mexico to the United States. During the experience, visitors at Parque El Alberto, located about 800 miles from the actual Mexican-U.S. border, are led by fake smugglers on a 7-mile hike that includes climbing over fences and trying to steer clear of barking dogs, flashlight beams, and other obstructions in an effort to elude fake Border Patrol officers. I'm not sure that I'm going to try that next time I'm in Mexico. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Dave and Deb, who are coming to us from theplanetd.com and come to talk to us about Southern Australia. Dave and Deb, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us, Chris.
In unison.
And I've been wanting to have Dave and Deb on for a while. They're two of my favorite bloggers. So you went to Southern Australia here within the last year, as I recall.
Actually, it was just a little over a month ago that we were in Southern Australia. So it feels like last year, though. Like, it's been amazing when you're traveling just how time flies or goes slow or whatever.
And when we talk about Southern Australia, we're talking about a particular region. So can you put it on a map for us?
Yeah, it's the least visited state in South Australia, and it is just in the southern part. It borders Western Australia, I believe, and I'm not sure what's on the other side.
Well, when you fly to Southern Australia, you fly into Adelaide, so that'll help people. That's the main city of Southern Australia.
Excellent. And what itinerary would you recommend if we were to visit Southern Australia?
There is so much to do. We were surprised that it was one of the least visited states when we went there. When we started in Adelaide, it's a quick way to get into the outback if you go up to Wilpena Pound, just 5-hour drive north of Adelaide. Mm-hmm. So that's a great place to start. Rent a truck and head on out there and explore. But they also have a great wine region as well. The Barossa Valley is a place that is beautiful, and they have excellent wines.
And what sort of wines would I find in Southern Australia?
Well, Southern Australia is known for its Shiraz wines, and one of the most famous ones is Penfolds Winery. That's the biggest one out of that region that we know of.
Okay. And for those of you not in Australia, that would be a Syrah, that they have a different name for it in Australia.
Ah, there we go. And moving on, there's a ton of adventure activities you can do there. Kangaroo Island is one of the most visited places in Southern Australia, and it's a great place to view wildlife. There's sea lions there. There's obviously kangaroos and wallabies. It's a great place to see koalas.
Kangaroo Island really is difficult to get to. You can take a ferry over there, but it'd be nice if you had a car driving around because there's so many beautiful landscapes out there at the Remarkable Rocks, which are these rock formations that have been formed by wind and sea over the years. And they're just absolutely beautiful. And the Admiral's Arch as well. So there's a ton of different types of landscapes that have been formed over the years.
They even have a great sand dune for sandboarding.
How big is the island? I really don't have any idea.
It's Australia's third largest island. So it's quite big, actually. It takes a few hours to drive around for sure.
Okay.
So there's an actual full-on a few communities there. So it's larger than we expected. We thought we were flying to a little island that would just have a bunch of kangaroos on it, but there's actually a full settlement there of a few different towns.
Okay.
Yeah. And another great place to visit if you love wildlife is Port Lincoln. There we did a great white shark cage diving, which is pretty outrageous.
You did a great white shark cave diving. So the first question obviously is, why? And the second question is, was it what did you expect it?
Dave? Well, definitely why we did great white shark diving, because it's a great way to get up close to these guys. It gives you a little bit of adrenaline. You get in the water. It's actually a little surface fed cage. So you're just under the water by about maybe 3-4 feet. And you get to view these amazing creatures pretty close up. We had one, I would say it was probably a good 6 meters long, which is what, about
18 feet?
Yeah, it was quite a big shark, definitely. Probably one of the biggest ones we've seen.
Yeah, we did some shark diving in South Africa as well, and the sharks there were much smaller. They were about 4 meters long. South Australia, it was a bigger.
Yeah, and there's nothing like the feeling of seeing this massive creature come out of basically the dark and come right at you, come very close, but very peaceful, very serene, come at you, pass by you like you're almost not there. It's quite an incredible experience, and I'd recommend anybody to do it.
Okay. And you make sure you don't have any open wounds or something before you get in the water? Any safety things that they recommend?
Well, because you're in a cage, you're pretty safe, especially in South Australia. They have great regulations there.
Okay.
So, yeah, I would say don't have any open wounds or the shark might get excited.
The biggest safety thing they say is don't put your hands outside
the cage. Yeah.
Most people tend to do that, as I got yelled at for doing, because when you're looking at it, you're trying to get some video or some photos, trying to get that great shot, and you're hand tends to extend outside the cage without knowing it.
No, it doesn't. That's just Dave. He tends to just go for the photo rather than think about his safety. And I see the shark go by and I go to Dave to point it out and I see him with his hand right out. It's just crazy. So don't do what he does.
And then you said after the shark dive, you were diving with, I think you said dolphins?
Yeah, that was pretty amazing because first of all, the thing is, when you're in Australia, they talk about sharks a lot. So we swam with dolphins before, but in South Australia, there was this level of stress when you were swimming with the dolphins because they talked about the sharks. They said, okay, we're in shark country, and we weren't too far from where the great whites are spotted. And our dive guide, he actually wore a shark deterrent. We weren't sure. We were like, I don't really think. I think this is all for show, because how come the dolphins aren't afraid of his little shark deterrent?
What is a shark deterrent?
It's like a leash that he wears on his ankle that emits a pulse that actually repels the shark, they say.
Yeah. They just said stay within 10 meters of your guide and then you'd be safe. So I just stayed close to the dolphins because I know that. Rumor has it that if dolphins are around, sharks are not.
Okay.
But it was pretty amazing. We have swam with dolphins before, and this was one of the best experiences that we've ever had in South Australia. The dolphins were just so playful and interested, and they stuck around for a long time. But be prepared, the water is cold. It was 60 degrees when we were there.
Okay.
It's really funny swimming with the dolphins because also in the same area, you can swim with sea lions. And you're thinking about sharks, you're going, aren't sea lions one of the main food
meals
for sharks?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. So we're getting in with the sea lions and they're telling us, don't go over the barrier. Just whatever you do, don't go over the barrier. And then our dive master starts going over the barrier. It was quite funny. But we came out unscathed and it was a thrill of a lifetime.
Excellent. And then what else would we do down there?
Well, definitely you got to head out to the Gawler Ranges. This was something that's quite unique out there. And we got to go to this place called, how do they say that? Lake
Gardner?
Gardner, I believe it is. And what this is it's a salt lake. So it's kind of like you're on Mars because you have this big white salt lake, a beautiful blue sky, but with red dirt all in the front. Quite a contrasting landscape. And you can walk on this salt lake. They have actually races there, he was saying.
Yeah, they do. It's a lot like the salt flats in the States. They do the land test drives there as well for speed at this. So it's pretty incredible to see. We had never been to the salt flats in America. So this was our first time at one of these. So it was exciting to see. And that's another place where you can get right into the outback quickly in South Australia, where we were staying in a camp right in the middle with they're taking using rainwater for their water. You're really out in the middle of nowhere. Kangaroos are just jumping through the camp and the birds that were flying through were incredible. So the wildlife that you can see out there, and they're known for these amazing rock formations that they have. So it's quite the experience to go out there and of course see the old sheep farms as well. If you're there at the right season, we were about what'd they say, 2 weeks late? We could have seen some sheep shearing. So South Australia is one of those places that's just still really wild. You can see a lot of the things that you see around Australia, but the crowds are so much less. It's really incredible. You have camps to yourself. You have parks to yourself. It's pretty wild. And that's kind of the way I put it, still wild.
And you were there in late fall.
Yeah, just getting into, starting to get into their winter, yeah.
Okay. Is that a good time to go? Did you find the weather then to be pleasant? I think of outback, I think hot, obviously.
Yeah, I would definitely say that that is the perfect time to go because the outback wasn't too crazy. It was probably around 85, somewhere around there. Maybe got up to 90 at the very hottest, but not unbearable like in the hundreds as it would be in their summertime. So, and the weather all around, not rainy. We really had great weather while we were there.
Yeah, I think it's a good time to go because it's quite dry. Mind you, people said to us, if you come in spring, it's very lush. But it was nice not to have to worry about rain. And I really loved seeing the outback. I wanted to see it dry like that because that's what I think of. So, and then also, I think even then, even though it doesn't get a lot of tourists there, that's still a better time to go because there's even less tourists.
Okay.
So, yeah. We always like to go at a time when there's not a lot of tourists. It's great.
And you talk about a lot of tourists. Did you get to Adelaide as well?
We did. Yeah, we spent a couple days in Adelaide. And what a great city. It's got that international vibe, but it still feels like a small town, which was nice. You feel it was just really nice to walk around. One thing we learned that the people of Adelaide are really proud of is the fact that they do not come from convict descent. So we heard that quite a bit when we were there, which I didn't realize.
I didn't either.
Yeah, this is actually people chose to inhabit
In Adelaide,
in South Australia. So, yeah.
There's another good attraction just outside of Adelaide. It's just about 20 minutes from Adelaide city centers, which is you can go up into the Adelaide Hills. It's like its own little wine region, just 20 minutes from there. Great food, great wine, and a very completely different feel than Adelaide.
And anything else in Adelaide that you would recommend? You mentioned just walking around, but is there any other sites that you stopped at or museums or anything else culturally?
Yeah, I would say that the actual cultural museum that they have, it's a great place to see the history. They have a lot of artwork from the indigenous people there. You can go through a nice history of South Australia with Adelaide. I'm going to have to say we didn't do tons of stuff. We walked around. We went to Googer Street. Is that the main street there?
That's the Eat Street there.
It's dining.
Great food, yeah.
They have a really great pedestrian street as well with all of the malls and shopping along, which is really a lot of fun, lots of street performers.
Yeah, that's
there.
Rundle Street.
Rundle Street.
Rundle Mall, yeah.
Yeah, that's another great area. There's just some great pockets where you just get that whole vibe of being in the city, which is a lot of fun. Great dining, and that's another great thing. Adelaide has a great beach that you can go to, and hang out. It's kind of got everything that you need for an international city.
Excellent. Now, you'd been to Australia before.
No, this was our first.
Oh, really? It's your first trip. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What surprised you about Australia or Southern Australia in particular?
What surprised us most about South Australia, for me anyway, was the diversity of the landscape. You always hear about the Great Ocean Road and all the other amazing landscapes that Australia has to offer. But I think the mixture and the diversity of the landscape that South Australia has offered, from the outback to the Flinders Ranges, Wilpena Pound up there, these amazing archaeological and very old rock formations, to beautiful beaches, to the island of Kangaroo Island. It really offers such a huge, diverse landscape that you can take it all in a rather short amount of time, which is something that's not usually thought of when you go to Australia. When you go there, you got to have lots of time to see lots of things. But in South Australia, you can encompass a lot of different landscapes within a short amount of time.
Okay. And you say archaeological, and you caught me a little surprised by that. Geological?
Geological.
Okay. I meant geological.
Yes, you were meaning the geological landscape. At Wilpena Pound, it's 500 million years old. And because the rocks are you can just see all the layers of rocks. It's quite an amazing thing. They haven't really come to the conclusion of what exactly has happened at Wilpena Pound. Some say that a meteor dropped there. Some say that it's just the Earth's crust moving over thousands of years. But because it's such a unique landscape, you can see the layers of rocks. It's just this giant mass of rocks all over. Mm-hmm. It's a mountain range, but it's really formed in this incredible circle.
It like looks, a bowl almost,
yeah, almost
right?
like okay. a bowl. And you can see all the layers of thousands of years. So it's pretty incredible to go through and see.
Excellent. One question we usually ask is, what do the guidebooks recommend that you were a little disappointed by?
Ooh, mostly people just do the Barossa Valley or the wine region. And after just a couple of days there, you're ready to move on. I don't think that that's a place to really focus your attention on. It's very beautiful and the wines are nice, but there's not much more to do. And I think that's what a lot of people, they revolve their trip around, going to taste the wines in the Barossa Valley. Okay. And I would say get out and get to Wilpena Pound. Get away, because the Barossa Valley is very close to Adelaide. So I would say get out a little farther. Go see Port Lincoln as well. And I think that's such a place that people just don't go to. So,
and what is at Port Lincoln? Why are we seeing Port Lincoln?
Port Lincoln is a little bit more difficult to get to. I think it's about a 5-hour drive where you can fly. And that's where you can get out to the outback. You can go to the beach. They even have some wineries around there.
Yeah.
And then that's where we swam with the dolphins, and you have the great white sharks. There's so many things going on there. But
got it. Okay.
Yeah. So I just say, get out and explore more than just being around Adelaide, where people tend to stay.
Okay. Picture for me, you're standing in the prettiest spot you saw in all of South Australia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Oh, the Kingsford Homestead. Now I say get out of the Barossa Valley, but the Kingsford Homestead was in Barossa Valley. I think that was one of the prettiest places, just overlooking. This is what I'm going to say. It was just this beautiful old homestead that used to be the setting of this very famous TV show that was around worldwide.
McLeod's Daughters.
Yeah, it was called McLeod's Daughters, but we didn't get it in Canada, and I don't think you got it in the States, but it was really famous around the world. And I can see why they made that the setting for something that was really for television. It was just beautiful. It was picture perfect.
And Dave, same question. Same place or a different place?
No, I would say a different place. For me, I'm standing in the most beautiful place. It was Admiral's Arch in Kangaroo Island.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way the arch formed, the rocks were amazing, the sun was setting, it really was, and you look out into these islands just off to the east coast there, and it was just absolutely beautiful, breathtaking, the smell of the seawater. To me, that was just someplace really special.
Excellent. What do you wish you'd known before you went?
I wish I would have known more about Kangaroo Island. I have to say, when I saw the itinerary and went, oh, we're going to Kangaroo Island, I didn't think much about it. And then when I went there, I saw that there was so much to do. There's a lot of conservation going on. There's a lot of sanctuaries for wildlife. I didn't realize that sea lions came there to breed and spent so much time there. And I guess I wasn't prepared for just how amazing Kangaroo Island was, which on one hand is a great surprise, but I kind of wish that I did more research before to really take advantage of everything, because there was so much to do there, I didn't know where to begin.
And when you saw the itinerary, now I'm assuming you were a guest of the Visitors Bureau.
Yes, we were.
So you didn't set up some of the itinerary, so that's why it caught you by surprise.
Yeah, well, we collaborated with them and came up with ideas of what we wanted to see. Like, we actually asked them, we were like, we knew that you could dive with sharks there, and we knew that you could go into the outback. And then they went, oh, you have to go to Kangaroo Island. We went, oh, that sounds good. Let's go to Kangaroo Island, not realizing that it was the place to go. So that was something we didn't really look into, which is kind of funny when you realize, when we got there and realized that it's one of the most popular places that everyone goes to see. So
now, one of the things that's nice about Australia, obviously, is that they speak a similar language to English, and you get a chance more to meet the locals. Any local that you met that left an impression on you?
Yeah, definitely. It was up in the Gawler. It was the Gawler Rangers, right?
Yeah.
It was Jeff Schultz. This guy, Jeff Schultz, he's from Gawler Rangers Wilderness Safaris. And Jeff was totally
Crocodile Dundee.
He was Crocodile Dundee to the T, to the accent, to the hat, to what he was wearing. Everything about him screamed Crocodile Dundee. And you don't want to say that to him. But every time he talked, Deb and I would look at each other and kind of laugh and giggle, because it was like I'm in this movie back in the 80s. He's talking with the accent, and all his euphemisms that he's using and stuff like that were all very indicative of Crocodile Dundee. So he was definitely a personality that stuck out in my mind while we were there.
Yeah, and what I loved about him is he grew up in the bush, and he loves the outback, and he was all about conservation. He was always working about, because fires are such a big problem there, so he works with the tourism board and the conservation to try to stop these fires and figure out ways to control them. He really cares about the animals, and he's Crocodile Dundee in every great sense. He really loves Australia, and he knows everything about it.
And that's one thing I would say about like all the people that we met in South Australia, is that they have this incredible passion for their country, their state, and where they are. And they're really about conservation and just about sharing the beauty of their region with everybody. And I think that's one thing that I took away from there is the people there. You can't help but love South Australia just because of the way people talk about it, love it. You end up loving it as well.
And when you talk about the fires, there's kind of two things I think of there. One, I think of just bushfires in an area that's just scrub bushes, but then they also have the areas that have the gum trees, or the eucalyptus trees, as we would call them, that have terrible fires because those trees are basically filled with oil. Are we talking about the first one here? I'm sort of picturing from where you're going.
In the outback where Jeff has his place, there are it's definitely the bushfires. Yeah. But he was also talking about how it came so close to one area, and that's the eucalyptus. That's the thing about that area, is you can be with the eucalyptus trees, and then just a couple hour drive, you're right into the outback. So that's the thing about South Australia. It's all right there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he was talking about fires that were close to the city, and then talking about fires that were out in the outback. So both.
Yeah. Cause the ones I know with eucalyptus trees, there's been some devastating fires recently in terms of loss of life and in terms of loss of property and such, because they are closer to the cities, and because of the way the eucalyptus reacts with fire. Which I think is a natural part of the tree. But on the other hand, you don't want to be standing there when that happens. So.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, exactly. And it's on people's minds. It's a topic of conversation that comes up a lot, the bushfires and the fires that are closer to the city.
I've got three last questions for you.
Okay.
Something that makes you laugh and say only in South Australia.
I don't know. Everything was mate.
Everything was mate, yes. The one thing that I enjoyed, because I think it was real, very sincere, is not everything being mate, but the usual other part of that is no worries.
Yes.
You know, as a response to something. Can we do this? No worries.
No worries.
And it's just a very sincere, we're just not that stressed here.
That's for sure. They're definitely not that stressed out there.
Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in South Australia when what?
When a kangaroo jumps in front of your truck.
That's generally a bad thing.
Yeah. And there's so many of them that, yeah. And because we saw, that was one thing. We really had to keep an eye out for kangaroos.
And when you say your truck, you were driving your own truck? You were driving a ute?
Yeah. And there were different times we were self-driving. And then we had drivers as well when we had our guides. And pretty much all the time you had to keep an eye out. You know you're in South Australia when you're driving down the middle of the road, because you have to keep an eye out for kangaroos.
And did your car or truck have a roo bar? Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely, but luckily we didn't have to use it.
Yeah, I had an uncle who until recently lived, and when he lived in Australia, not in South Australia, but out in the bush parts of New South Wales and Queensland. And yeah, you keep this big, heavy bar on the front of your car to protect the radiator, especially from being bashed in by hitting a kangaroo. And he had just all of these stories about driving at night and a kangaroo jumps in front and it totals the car. And now he's walking into town because the car that had the roux bar was already in the shop because he'd hit another roux. And there's quite a few out there.
Yeah, and they're fast. Like, they come out of nowhere. So that's the thing. You have to drive down the middle of the road. That was the big thing.
Yeah.
Drive down the middle of the road and just keep an eye out for kangaroos.
Excellent. If you had to summarize Southern Australia in three words, what three words would you use?
It's diverse. It's beautiful. It's cultural.
Okay, and when you say cultural, we haven't really talked about a lot of cultural things, so which...
Cultural, just meaning the people that live there really, really make that area special. That's really, like I said before, the landscapes were diverse, but it was the people I met and their passion for that state that really had an impact on me.
Okay, and Dib?
Okay, it is exciting.
Okay.
Exciting being all of the things you can do.
So you were the one who said, let's dive with sharks, then, it sounds like.
Yeah, diving with sharks, flying over Wilpena Pound,
okay,
trekking out into the outback. So it's exciting. It is incredible. The beauty, it has rocks called the Remarkable Rocks. It has an incredible landscape. It has incredible diversity. So incredible, exciting, and at the same time, relaxing. So I shall say my third word is relaxing, because there's just so many little retreats that you can go on. If you're staying out in a camp, it's a relaxing feeling just listening to the birds. If you're out in the wine region, it's just relaxing to go taste some wines and then sit in a B&B. So those are my three.
Excellent. And where can people read more about your travels, and especially in your case, your adventure travels?
To read more about our travels at theplanetd.com.
Excellent. Well, thank you both for coming on. It's great to finally have you on The Amateur Traveler.
Thanks
so much for having us.
In news of the community, The Amateur Traveler is turning 8 years old next Tuesday on July 2nd. And I put that word out on The Amateur Traveler Facebook community, and I heard back from some people. Jane wrote me and said, I wanted to tell you again as I emailed you years ago too, how much I appreciate your podcasts. On our recent driving trip to Europe, we did a circle from Milan up to Prague, over to Budapest, and down to Milan through Slovenia. My husband and I listened to tons of your podcasts, 3 weeks worth, actually, as I just hooked up my iPod to the stereo system in the car, and we listened to podcast after podcast. First, we hit the ones applicable to where we'd be on this trip. Then we just started with the oldest ones I had and worked our way forward. Last year, we did this during a one-month driving tour of Australia by listening to all 400-plus TED Talks I had on my iPod. You were our entertainment and enlightenment on this trip. It really spurred on our talks about where to go next and what is our bucket list. Actually, we crossed off 3 on my own bucket list in the past 12 months, seeing Uluru, Angkor Wat, and taking a cooking class in Vietnam. And Jody Ettenberg would be very proud of you for that, Jane. However, I don't think we'll live long enough to get to all the places we'd like to see. I appreciate all you do to bring entertainment and travel education to us. I listen to your podcasts via Stitcher on my iPhone and while I'm walking on the beach at home, as well as This Week in Travel, which often has me laughing out loud. Well, thanks so much, Jane, for your encouraging words. I also heard from Paul, and Paul said, great job, and you should be proud of your accomplishments. You're my favorite podcaster because you're so organized, consistent, and deliberate in your insightful questions and comments. Except when you do your own self-travel dialogue, then you ramble on like a travel journalist, which is really annoying, LOL. And I wrote back to Paul, it's always good to get feedback. I'm not sure how I'll do that differently in the future. Perhaps Paul will come on and interview me about my travels when I come back from someplace. And one of the reasons that I like doing an interview show is I do find that breaking up one person talking with another voice and having a conversation is better content. And actually, like Paul, I dread those shows because, for one thing, I've heard those stories before. And so maybe there is something I can do differently, and I'll have to think about it. And I heard a question from Bob that he was having trouble seeing the iTunes enhanced version of the show anymore with an update in iTunes. And there's two tricks here. One is that they seem to have broken that in the Windows version, and hopefully they will fix that soon. And then in the Mac version, you have to command click now on the icon at the top of the window that's a icon of the Amateur Traveler to see the version that has the chapters and the pictures. And for those of you who don't know, there are two versions of the Amateur Traveler that come out. One is an iTunes enhanced version on iPods, iPhones, iPads, and in iTunes shows you pictures and links of all the places we talk about. But again, there's a problem with that. I'll put a link in this episode, in the show notes for this episode, that describe what I'm talking about and have a video. And this comes from Libsyn, which is who hosts my podcast. For anybody who's having trouble understanding exactly what I'm talking about, where to click. It's easier to see that than to hear it. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or participate in the Facebook community, facebook.com/amateurtraveler. Or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @ChrisDuex. And as always, thanks so much for listening.